Okay, there is a joke that is often said about practices of Orthodox Jews. It's related that the rabbis are going to come out and prohibit smoking, but the Orthodox Jews aren't worried because they're going to sell their lungs to a non-Jew. So, spoiler alert, that doesn't actually work. But it's an interesting question why it doesn't work, especially in light of the fact that there seems to be a lot of sales that we are okay with, even if there's some degree of controversy about it. And most prominently among them, Mechiras Chametz, in Eretz Yisrael last year, the Shemitah year, and it's a highly controversial practice of selling land in Israel during the year of Shemitah so as to not be subject to the obligations, the prohibitions of Shemitah, and that's actually a lot more controversial than the Mechiras Chametz. But the whole question of what sales work and what sales don't work is a major debate, and especially since there are so many different sales mechanisms that we find in Halakha, and quite a few more than the ones we just mentioned that are more well known, it's an important question as to what counts as a real sale and what doesn't. The Rishonim talk about in the beginning of Maseches Bechoros that it might be a good idea, and the Shulchan Aruch says actually a mitzvah to do this, that if somebody has an animal that's about to give birth to a firstborn that would be subject to Kedushas Bechor, so then it's a good idea to sell at least part of the animal to get into some kind of partnership with the non-Jew, because that will exempt the animal from the obligations of Bechor. And in that situation, it's more of a necessity because we don't really have a good way to deal with Bechor Bizman Hazah. It would be a situation that doesn't really have a better option. So perhaps there it's more readily embraced, although there's quite a debate about that also. Maybe we'll see if we have time. So the question of what kind of sales are acceptable and what kind of sales aren't acceptable is a major issue, and it's provoked by the Mishnah and the Sugya a little bit afterwards of Matnas Beis Choron, which appeared in Daf Yomi recently, on Daf Mem Ches, and here it's related in source number one and source number two, the Mishnah and the Gemara, where the story is told about a man, quite a interesting family here, whose father had taken a neder not to get hana from the son. And the son was then making a chasana, his own son was getting married, and he wanted his father to come, but his father had taken this neder not to get hana from him, so he had this plan. He said, what does he do? Amar l'chavero, he says to his friend, chaser v'su'uda nesunim hinam l'fanecha, that here I'm going to give you the hall and the meal. It's all yours. It should all be your property. Ella kidei sheyavu abba v'yochel imana b'su'uda. So why am I doing this? Because I want my father to be able to come to the meal, and otherwise he can't come because he took this nether. So this is the way I'm going to deal with it. So the man is no fool. So when he saw what was going on, he said, okay, amar im shalihim. So if indeed they're mine, great. So harehem mekdashim l'shamayim. So I here dedicate them as hektish. And the first guy says to him, well, that's not the plan. Nasati l'chaz shalish, takishem l'shamayim. That was the idea I gave to you. You think that was the reason? So you could dedicate it to the Beis HaMikdash. So the other guy says, yeah, I totally understand what's going on. You gave this to me so that you can have your father come and break his vow, essentially, and eat at your son's chasana. It's all going to be my problem. It's all going to be me who's helping you this. So apparently that's no good. And the Mishnah ends, Amar Chachamim kol matana she'ena shehikdisha tehei mekudeshas eina matana. That a matana that you give to somebody, but it's not real, apparently, because the recipient cannot decide that he wants to dedicate it to the Beis HaMikdash, he wants to makdish it, so apparently that's not real, that doesn't count. So based on this Mishnah and the Gemara that follows, many do raise questions about a number of the various sales that we have, where it doesn't seem like they are really so sincere. It seems like they are for another purpose. And isn't that a problem in light of what we see here? And the Gemara goes on to say that there are certain aspects that are specifically problematic, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But what does that say about Mechira Chametz? And what does that say about Tesa Mechira? And what does it say about a number of other such devices, which may be less well known, but are also a part of our system in one way or another? So, sorry? Yeah, so anything like that. It's definitely, it's got its own issues. Yeah, so what exactly is the statement about this? And what we'll see, talking about this a little bit, is that there are many controversies that surround these types of transactions, and there are many responses to the controversies. But what is important to keep in mind is that they're not always coming from the same premise, and they're not always necessarily bothered by the same thing. And that sometimes shows up in some of the literature, that they are talking past each other because they're concerned about different things. So there's a notion called harama, which also comes up many times in the Gemara. And harama is a mysterious word, and it can be translated in a very negative way, that it means working around something, evading something, or sometimes it sounds like it's more neutral. And essentially, you have a legitimate need to avoid a problem, so you should get around it, and you're recommended to do that. So it's not clear how exactly we relate to it, but in many places in the Gemara, it is talked about negatively, and in some places, it sounds like it means specifically something false. So the question of what kind of an issue that is and how to relate to it is a big part of the debate. And again, you'll notice that they're fighting about different things, because in some cases, the concern is that the process is fake, that it's a sham, as it would say. That's sometimes the issue. And other times, it seems like the focus is not so much on that, but the question is that the whole endeavor is avoiding a mitzvah or avoiding a halacha, and therefore it's wrong because of the goal. It's wrong because of the spirit. And that's the concern. So we'll see that playing out here a little bit. And one of the major positions on this issue, which led to a whole world of literature, regarded Mechiras Chametz, and a specific aspect of it was the position of the Bechor Shor, writing in the 1700s, who had a strong feeling against Mechiras Chametz, but specifically not really Mechiras Chametz, but something else that was related to that issue, that there was a practice then of selling animals, because the animals would feed on Chametz, or the real robust feeding would happen from chametz, and these individuals did not want their animals to get weaker, to get skinnier. What's next week's parsha topic? Over the course of Pesach, so therefore they would sell their animals to non-Jews and let the non-Jews feed the animals over Pesach. And the Bechor Shor was very upset about that, because he said the whole Mechiras Chametz thing is a sham, is a harama, and a harama is not going to be effective here, because if you're letting your animals benefit from chametz, so that's an Isser D'Oraisa, benefiting from chametz on Pesach with an Isser in HaTorah, and a harama is only acceptable for Dinim D'Rabbanan. And that is the whole story behind it. There are lines in the Gemara that sound like that. It's a debate, as we'll see, whether or not that really applied there. But that was the conclusion that the Bechor Shor had, that since benefiting from chametz on Pesach is an Issur D'Oraisa, so we can't allow this harama, this fake sale, to have an impact on this and to feed the animals that way with this chametz that's prohibited. And his concern clearly was, the way he expresses it, it was the nature of the sale. He believed that the sale was fake. And he had many reasons why. He said these people aren't in the business of trading animals, and the purchasers are not really looking to buy animals, and they're not paying a real price. And essentially, he didn't think that the sellers were serious, that they didn't really want to sell their animals, and it's not worth it to them to sell away their animals just so that they can be fed over the course of Pesach. So therefore, he didn't think that the whole thing was real, and he was very against the selling of the animals. When it came to the selling of chametz itself, so that he thought, okay, that could be acceptable, because that, he said, is only a derabbanan. Now, why is that a derabbanan? We assume that seeing chametz, owning chametz on Pesach, is an issur HaTorah. So he was working off another controversial premise, that he was assuming, because the Gemara has a statement in the first parak of Tzvachim, that bedikas chametz is only an obligation midrabbanan, because min HaTorah, bittul is effective in negating the ownership of chametz. So therefore, he suggested, he understood that since you're mevatel your chametz, all that's left is an issur d'rabbanan, so selling chametz could work for that. But when it comes to the feeding of your animals with chametz, that's an issur d'oraisa, so that we can't accept the harama. So this was his position, which many accepted, many more probably didn't accept, and there's a number of controversial points. One we won't talk about so much now because it's not so relevant to now, it's a big Pesach issue. That last assumption is very questionable, to say that bitzel chametz knocks the issur down to a drabanan. That's not talking about the chametz that you're selling, many argue. Many argue it's two different groups of chametz. The chametz that you're selling, you're not mevatel. You're mevatel the chametz that you don't know about, that's under the couch, so that you're mevatel. But the chametz you're doing business with, how can you say you're negating that? So many didn't accept that premise. So because it's not yours. It's a non-Jew's animal food. You're benefiting from the non-Jew's chametz that he's feeding to, and bittul certainly wouldn't work if you're actually consuming it. So it wouldn't be yours anyway. So that premise was very controversial, but that's a Pesach topic, so we'll leave that for now. But the other two premises that he had that were relevant to all the other issues was that that sale is a harama and it's problematic because people aren't really committed to it, and that a harama is not acceptable by Torah law. So both points were questioned, both points were debated. Many thought that's not true, haramas could be acceptable by Torah law also. And others debated the other premise. They don't think that mechiras chametz is necessarily a harama, and that this concern could be answered. And the truth is, possible the Bechor Shor himself actually didn't conclude that mechiras chametz was a harama. That he then goes on to say, a comment that most people didn't notice, but the Sehemet noticed, and he called attention to this, that he has then another statement at the end, where he says that maybe Mechiras Hametz itself is actually better for another reason, because that he could believe was more genuine, maybe, because there you have really no choice, because either you have to destroy your Hametz, or it's going to become valueless. So I could believe somebody would genuinely sell it away, because better that than to have to destroy it. So that's really the better option. But in the case of the animals, he's actually selling his animal just so it doesn't lose out on a few days of better food. It's hard to believe. So that he didn't think was sincere. But the chametz itself, okay, maybe that could be sincere. So many quotes of the Bechor Shor say that he thinks that Mechiras chametz is a harama. It's not clear that's his conclusion. It's clear that chametz itself, okay, maybe that people are serious about. But the animals, I don't believe it. And that's going to be a problem. So again, the first two is what we'll focus on, the question of, is harama really an issue? That's just something to keep in the back of our minds. But it's really a distinction between Torah law and rabbinic law. But also the main point that's relevant here is his idea, that his assumption that this is not a valid sale because they're not serious about it and because this is done for this ulterior motive and not by people who are really in business for this purpose. So is that really the impression that this Gemara creates? So this din of Matnas Beschorim, that tells us that this kind of a transaction is a sham transaction and it's no good. So does that also reflect back on chametz? So many achronim thought not. The Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva about it, and there's a long tshuva about this in a sefer called Shivat Zion. It was written by Tim Sternfeld quite a while ago. And they point out that there are a number of issues with Matnas Beschorim that don't necessarily invalidate all kinyanim. They don't necessarily invalidate all sales. And in fact, there's a tshuva of the Maharam Rutenberg, but not the Rishon. There's a sefer called Tshuvas Maharam Rutenberg HaChronim, written by a descendant of his who lived in the later era. But his name was Moshe Rutenberg, who was also Maharam Rutenberg. So he notes that the truth is, even though the Gemara does speak negatively about haramos, but sales, theoretically, could be better than the usual haramos that the Gemara talks about, because a sale is a transaction which should be valid on its face regardless of your intent. So if you do an actual transaction, so then it doesn't matter that you may be insincere, or that you may have ulterior motives, but there's two parties involved, and if they're making a deal together, so then we should say that the deal is binding. And we normally say, dvarim shivalev, enam dvarim, the fact that you may be thinking something contradictory, that doesn't undermine the overt actions and the comments, the statements that you're making. So if you do a transaction and you say you're selling it, so that should be a valid transaction. So what happens to matnas bas beis charon? Why is that no good? So there are at least three aspects that the Gemara points to and the Rishonim point to that are probably relevant. So one is the Gemara first notes that hochiach sofo al tilaso, that the fact that he ends up making his wedding suit and paying for a suda that he claims is for somebody else, nobody's going to do that. Nobody's going to go to all this effort to make a suda that's really not his own. So his actions really completely undermine what he was doing. So that's a big part of it. And this sentence about that the person is limited in what he can do, the receiver is limited, he can't be makdishit. So that's also a big aspect. That's what the Mishnah says, that if a person who receives it can't be makdishit, he's not really getting it. Even though the Rishonim point out, and you have a lot of Rans here quoted in the sources that bring up some of these points, that it doesn't actually have to be that the receiver can be makdishit. Theoretically, I could sell something and make a condition that you can't be makdishit, and it would still be valid, or there could be other reasons why that limitation might be there. But the point of the Mishnah is that the guy can't do anything with it. So if there were other benefits that he could do, so then we could talk about it. It's not really all dependent on the ability to be makdishit, but that was an example of something he wanted to do and he couldn't do it. If there were other things, then maybe there's some kind of benefit, but if there's literally nothing he could do with it, so then we can't say that that's a real transaction. So those are two important issues. But what might be the most important issue, according to the Rishonim who mentioned this, and the Ran and others, and Tosus and a few others, that he says so explicitly. He said so in the Mishnah what he was doing. He said, I'm giving you this so that my father can come to the meal. So if that is absolutely a part of the story here, so then, as the Shiva Siyam points out, so then that's not really a problem for Mechira Chametz, because we don't say that we're doing this just for this purpose, we just sell it straight out. And therefore, if that's really a crucial detail, so then that should save us. And a number of Rishonim do emphasize that, and you see that here in some of these sources. And in addition, the Ran does point out that there's really a machlokas on this point of whether you have to say it out or out. The Rashba was of that opinion, that you have to say something at the time of the transaction, that you have this ulterior purpose. But the Rambam maybe felt differently, and the Rambam said it could even be said later. So maybe that's a problem, that maybe when you come to right back to Chametz, and then maybe then you're saying something that indicates that it wasn't necessarily a full commitment. But even that, he thought, even according to the Rambam, it wasn't necessarily a problem, because still, you have to say it sometime close to the transaction. But here, the whole Pesach will go by, and you're not going to say anything to undermine it. So even according to the Rambam standard, he thought that that wasn't necessarily comparable, and that Mechiras Chametz isn't necessarily subject to these same issues. And he notes that there's another issue. We're learning about the only, so a few days before, there was another reference to this, which also could bring up the issue, that the Mishnah talks about a situation where you have somebody who took a vow of hana from another person, and now he's starving, and the other guy has food. So he wants to help, but what can he do, because this guy took a nether against him. So the Mishnah talks about he could give it to somebody else, under the present, let that person give it to him, and if there's nobody else around, he could be mafkir, the food. So that seems to be a harama here, because he's basically getting it to him, but through this indirect way. So here, this is brought in Shulchan Aruch, that din, that you can do that. And the commentaries point out that this isn't something we would recommend normally, but it's because the guy is starving, because there's a great need, so we'll allow it. And that's also a part of the discussion when it comes to haramas in general. It seems to be a part of it that need is a factor, and we're more comfortable with something that's more necessary, more so than that which is not as necessary. And that's a whole discussion of itself, and there's a lot to be said about that. But there, so there's another opinion in the Mishnah, that opinion of Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi didn't allow it. And the Gemara says, why didn't he allow it? There's this Gzeira Mishnah Maisa de Beis Chorim. And apparently it was a concern that it could lead to the same situation here of a fake kind of deal. And the Ran explains that what we're worried about is that even though we all know that this is just for the purpose of getting him the food, that's in itself okay. But maybe he'll come to start saying it out loud, but people will think you can do this and even say that you're doing that, and that's going to be like Maitza Beis Chorim. So it seems like that that's a crucial detail according to many of the Rishonim, and therefore that should help us with Mechiras Chametz. That's what the Shiva Sion writes. But he goes on to note that we're not totally able to just forget about this issue, says, therefore people should be careful not to say anything that undermines the sale. And that's sometimes a problem. That's the way we have it, because all the cynical comments we usually hear are usually made to the rabbi. But if you make a cynical comment to the purchaser and you suggest that this is really not sincere, so then he said that would be a problem. So you have to be careful not to indeed say anything to undermine it. But menastam, there's no reason to assume that that's happening. Then he goes on to say that the issue of selling the animals, which is what the Bechor Shor was upset about, he says that I don't like so much. He says that because it's pretty impossible to imagine you could do that without explaining and without getting into this issue of saying it out loud. So that, he thinks, is a problem. He says, so wherever there's not a minhag to do it, I don't think you should do it. If there's a minhag, they probably have what to rely on. But conceptually, he thinks that's much more problematic. And that was connected to this issue that it's about speaking. Yeah, but I'm still selling it to him and saying it's going to be his. So I'm not saying you can only have it so that you can do this. It's yours. Why am I doing it? Yeah, no, not necessarily. We don't make that deal, actually. Now, there is a discussion about that. There is a language. Yeah, there is a language. There is a language that the Rishonim talk about that you can make it clear that you're going to be available to get it back. But you don't make that as an explicit deal. You don't make that as an explicit condition, which may be a crucial issue here also, that in the Mishnah he's saying, I'm giving you this so that you do this, so that you host my father, that he can come because of that. But when it comes to the issue with chametz, so you're not making an explicit deal that he has to give it back to you, and it's an interesting discussion also, there's a whole history about this, that the practice of transferring chametz to a non-Jew over Pesach is mentioned in the Tosefta as something that can happen. And it talks about somebody who's on a boat, and Pesach all of a sudden shows up, and so therefore he realizes he's stuck with his chametz, so he could transfer it to a non-Jewish co-traveler. And that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, and it's brought in the Beis Yosef, it quotes from Rabbeinu Yerucham, that yeah, you can do this, ubilvad shelo yarin, as long as it's not a harama. The Beis Yosef says, I don't know what that means, the whole thing is a harama, and we're telling you to do it, so how can you say as long as it's not a harama? So there are a number of different views in the Rishon. So he arranges to get it back after Pesach, but that's the idea, but how explicit is that? So that's the thing. So there are at least three different interpretations of what the phrase there is, Bavaj Lo Yarin. It's also not clear where that comes from, because Beis Yosef quotes it from the Rabbeinu Yerucham. It's clear that some Rishonim had it in the Tosefta. It might have been a Girsa issue. So either it's from the Tosefta itself, or it's from the Rishonim. But there's this condition that it can't be a Harama. So what makes it a Harama? So there are different opinions in the Rishonim. And one of them is that it can't be a Matana Manas Lahachzir. That it can't be that this is a deal where you're obligated to return it to me afterwards. Even though they point out it's not clear why that should be a problem either, because the Gemara has that sugya many times of what is the status of a gift that's premised on the condition that you'll give it back, and we assume that during the time the person has it, it's actually theirs. It's Shmei Matana, that's called a Matana. So why shouldn't it work by Chametz? So that's a whole discussion. Some thought it was just too much of a joke at that point, that it's that we have to be more careful with chametz and to have it explicitly conditioned on returning it afterwards, that's going to be too much. And others understood a little bit more. The Radbaz has a tshuva where one place he says like that, and another place the Radbaz has a different explanation. He thinks it's a more serious issue. He thinks that maybe it's not really a transaction, that it's all contingent now. You don't know what's going to happen. So maybe if a non-Jew doesn't give it back, so it was never his, so then it was the Jews the whole time. So maybe you can't escape Bal Yira Bal Yimatze with a contingent transaction. You have to know that it's going to be solidly not yours, waiting to see how it turns out. So maybe that's not going to be good enough. So that's a whole discussion to what extent that's an issue when it comes to chametz. So is it a problem in general? Is that the issue with kinyanim, that if you have this advanced knowledge that it's going to come back to you, does that undermine things? Is that called a harama by its nature? So that was also machlokas, just how much is that a problem in and of itself. And there is a din in Shulchan Aruch, actually, that here, this is source Yud Beis here, Shulchan Aruch Aruch Chaim Reish Mem Vav, Gemara says that you're not allowed to rent out your animal to a non-Jew that will have him doing malacha with it on Shabbos, because it's still your animal, and your animal is subject to shvisas behema, so it can't do malacha on Shabbos either. So if the animal is rented to a non-Jew and he's working it on Shabbos, so that's going to be a problem. So then, for his own purposes, but your animal is supposed to be at rest. That's also din in the Torah. The Torah talks about your animals being at rest on Shabbos also. So that's a problem. So the question is, so what happens if he doesn't give it back in time? So the Shulchan Aruch says, "Mishiyula who skira la'akum v'hisnei mola hachzira lo kodim Shabbos." Right. So his deal was he was supposed to give back before Shabbos, because otherwise that's a problem. But he didn't do it. V'ikvob. So he ended up holding on to it too long. So what should he do? So yafkirenu beino levein atzmo kodem haShabbos. He should declare it hefker just privately himself, right before Shabbos. So it won't be his. O yomer behemti knuyu la'akum kidei shinatzel miyisur d'raisa. So to save himself from this iser, he can declare it as ownerless, just in a way that no one else is even going to know, and only for Shabbos. So it's not actually going to be potentially able to move to anyone else. And apparently, that's okay. Apparently, that's effective. So there's a whole discussion about this in the Taz, on what the conditions are. And there was a machloket that when it comes to ribis, so when it comes to charging interest, so that's its own whole story about nowadays we use the heter iska to allow increases needed for business investment. But there are other mechanisms that were also used to essentially get around the issue of ribis. So one of them that was used is sometimes if you wanted to borrow money from somebody and you wanted to allow him to get a profit for it, so you would buy something from him, and then you would sell something to him, rather. You would sell him something and then buy it back from him at a higher price. So he would end up profiting through your transaction because he would end up gaining from this deal that was happening at the same time. So setting aside the question of how that affects the Isra Rivas, his own discussion, but is that even a real sale? Because he's got to sell it back to you. He's not free to give it to anyone else. So that was a machlokis, a temesthetic of Nachum Krachmal. He thought that that was okay. You could see this based on the Shulchan Aruch of being mafkir the animal privately. And the Taz thought not. The Taz thought that a deal like that, where it's definitely going to come back to you and you don't have any freedom to sell it to anybody else, so that would be a harama and that would be problematic. It's also a question just how far can we go with saying you don't have, as long as you don't say it out loud, it's enough. What if the visibility of it, the optics of it is so blatant, is so obvious, is there a point where that just makes it unquestionable that it wasn't a real deal? So there's also another Gemara about this, which is also brought into the discussion. The Gemara in Ksubis and Dafayin Pesach Beis, where the Gemara talks about a woman who was looking to hide her assets from her new husband. So the Gemara doesn't focus on the morality of that, but it just talks about how she did it, that she then signed it all over to her daughter. So it should be look like it's her daughter's property, so the husband shouldn't have any claim on it. Kasfasino Levarte, so she wrote it all to her daughter, and then she got married, and then she got divorced. So after she got divorced, she wanted to take back what she had written away to her daughter. And the psak was that, yes, she can take it, even though the daughter wants to keep it, so still the mother can get it back, because it was so obvious, it was so clear, that this was only done to try to hide her assets. And therefore, we understand that it's a completely obvious to everybody, and it was never a deal in the first place. And that's the way the Rishonim here understand. Sorry? She does have to give it back, but the point is... Right, so the shtar was nothing. The shtar that she wrote to give it to her daughter, so, yeah, it was invalidated. Because even though you say, look, she went through the whole process, but it's so obvious why she did it, that's how the Rishonim here explained, the Tosfos, the Mizrahim, and the Tshuvos HaRash, they all explained that that's what's going on, that when you have a situation where it's just undeniable, that that's the purpose, so then we can say that it's no good. So apparently there is a point where things can be so overtly fake that they're not going to count, but that's not necessarily always the case. So there was a machlokas in general as to what exactly is the main concern. Is the concern the evasion, or is the concern the falsity of the process? So there are a couple of other examples where we find some of these transactions going on. For example, so there is a discussion the Shulchan Aruch has that we were just talking before about Tefillas Kelim. So what happens if there's a situation where it's Shabbos, you can't be Tovel Kelim on Shabbos, and somebody realized that he had his kli, now he wants to use it for Shabbos, and now it's impossible to be tovel it. So, sorry? Yes, yeah, so I'll come back to that in a second, because I think it was relevant also. So the Shulchan Aruch has this Eitzah here, that one thing you can do is you can transfer it to a non-Jew, and then you'll be able to use it. So that's here in Source Yotes. So then give it to a non-Jew, and then you can borrow it from the non-Jew. And yeah, so could be you could do it on Shabbos, except here it says that I mean, it could be the question is what's the purpose? It could be that you could do this on Shabbos also, but you give it to him to own it, and you'll borrow it from him. So if you don't own the kli, so then that's not subject to an obligation of tefillah, and that'll be a way around it. So is that a harama? So this was a machlokas. There were those who were concerned about this, and the Taz over here, for example. So he emphasizes that this is only for that day, and this is only something because of this situation, and that this is not something that we can be comfortable with in the long term. And Kivi Eger has a similar etzah for if you have kalim that are too big to move. So then maybe that's a suggestion. But overall, we wouldn't be comfortable with it because it is a harama. While there are others who thought it wasn't necessarily a harama. So, for example, Shlomo Kluger, in some of his writings, so he took the position that this isn't a harama, that the din of tefillah kalim is only on kalim that you own, not on kalim that you're using. And for the day, you're happy to give it to him. So when we talk about a harama, sometimes we're concerned that you don't really mean it, because why would you want to actually give up this property that you're claiming to sell if it doesn't actually meet all the other details? But here, you just have to not own it this Shabbos, so you can use it on Shabbos, so why would you not want to be okay with this non-Jew owning it over Shabbos, which lets you use it? So that's an interesting question, whether or not that does.
If it's cool and you don't have
mikvah, right,
then also it's okay.
Right, so... Right, so it's a question also, maybe you will have a mikvah later. So it's a whole discussion back and forth, whether this is a harama or not. Rav Asher Weiss, in his Shuvas, he's referred to this as a harama. He has a Talmud who's very fond of one of his best Talmidim. It's Rav Avi Yosef's grandson. Rav Avi Yosef Toledano, who's a big Talmud of Rav Asher Weiss, and he's written many of his own Sfarim, and in one of his Sfarim, he has an exchange of letters between him and Rav Asher, where Rav Asher says it's a harama, and he thinks it's not a harama. So part of the question here is, again, what are we worried about when we talk about a harama? Are we worried about that you're evading the din somehow, and that it's somewhat of a fake out? Is that the issue? Or is it, no, we're worried that the transfer is not sincere, that the process is not real. But if the process is real, then maybe we're okay with it, even if it is basically getting around an obligation. So that seems to be the question when it comes to the Tefillas Kalim issue. Is it a harama or not? But there is what to worry that it will undermine the whole notion. And you brought up COVID. So I was concerned about that in the beginning of COVID, when people were buying Kalim because they all of a sudden found they had to be home for Shabbos, or home for Pesach, rather. They weren't planning on ever being home for Pesach, and all of a sudden now, the week before, they realized that they have to start buying things, and mikvahs were closed. So the question of what Eitzah was there to allow them to use the Kalim, so I was nervous about this idea of selling the Kalim, because the same Pesach, when you're going to be selling the Chametz, and understanding you have to stay away from the Chametz, and here you're selling your Kalim and assuming you can use the Kalim, there's such a contradiction. Sorry? So whether that works or not, obviously the problem is that was one of the Eitzahs, but the problem is it has to be a genuine Hefker. So it has to be publicly announced, and there are all kinds of standards, which is different from the Bittul Chametz. Bittul Chametz, we're more makel, because we don't really own the Chametz halachically, because of those who are the Hanah. Right, so that was a public, and now there were different Eitzahs, but the idea of selling it to a non-Jew was very uncomfortable with, because that it was such a stira to be doing both at the same time, to say, I can't use my Chametz because I sold it. Right, so I thought that was I was very uncomfortable recommending that to people, because Dafka on Pesach, such a contradiction, it seemed very problematic. So there's also another whole discussion, which I think also reflects the two different angles here of what's the concern, that there's a prohibition of cutting down trees. This is the Torah of Baal Pashto, it's not allowed to cut down trees. So it's a big discussion whether that's different if there's a need. The Gemara says that there's a klala involved, so some assume the klala is involved even if there is a need. So there's a whole... So the Torah talks specifically about fruit trees. It could be that it applies to other trees also on different levels. There's a whole big discussion. People are nervous in general about... Sorry? Yeah, so there's a lot of different issues, and it's a whole different discussion in general when it's okay and when it's not okay. But yes, you should cut it down for safety, but how that works, we could talk about at more length. But some were still concerned about the klala the Gemara and Baba Kama talks about, the sakana that the Gemara talks about. So the Beis Shlomo had an idea, others had also, that you should sell the trees to a non-Jew. And that will deal with it. You won't, they'll be the ones cutting down. You won't be the one cutting it down. So others thought, no, that's a harama. So there was objection to that in some of the other svarim. Yeruga Sabosem said, no, that's a harama, and Bal Tashchis is Nesu Daraisa, so the Bechor Shor said that you can't have haramas by Daraisa, so I'm not okay with that. And the Shuvas Netza Sorek, he said, it's a harama, but he doesn't agree with the Bechor Shor that you can't have haramas by Daraisa, so yes, it's harama, but he's okay with it. So you have, again, all these different opinions. It is a harama, it's bad, it's a harama, it's good, it's not a harama. So the Maharshad has a tshuva, which I thought was particularly interesting because it reflects these different attitudes. And the Maharshad says, no, it's not a harama, because the other things people were concerned about where they thought it was a harama is because it's going to come back to them. So then the sale doesn't seem real. But here, your whole point is you want the tree to get cut down. It's not going to come back to you. So that's a real sale. So why is that a harama? But then he goes on to say, and so I thought it was interesting, but maybe it's a problem for different reasons, because the Torah says that you shouldn't destroy the tree, and here you're causing it to be destroyed. So by selling it to the non-Jew who's going to cut it down, and you're causing it to be destroyed. So I just thought it was interesting because he's saying, well, it's not a harama, but it's a problem for the tree. But you could say that's what the harama issue is to begin with, that when you're causing the spirit of the issue to happen, even if you're doing it through, it's like selling your lungs to a non-Jew. So when you sell your lungs to a non-Jew, you're still getting the danger from the smoke. So the fact that you may have sold it is not going to help you at all. So here he's saying it's not a harama, that you're getting around the iser, and you're causing the same thing to happen. Maybe that is the harama. And you could also see here that when we're talking about why does it not work to sell your lungs to a non-Jew, so it has both problems. Because, like the Shlomo is saying here, like the Marshad is saying here, it doesn't really help, because the same thing is happening anyway. You're going to be just as sick if you sell your lungs to a non-Jew. But also, the other issue, how can you really believe that you're actually selling them when you're going to be walking around with them and you for the rest of your life? So it's hard to imagine that that's a real, genuine sale. So both of the issues that come up with haramas are relevant to that joke, and that's why, those are both reasons why it doesn't work. So this is a issue that is brought up in a lot of these contexts. And there's a lot of debate as to when are we worried about this and when are we not worried about this. And we see that there are some significant differences, and that there are different attitudes, and there are also ways that you can make things better or worse that also affect things. So what's an interesting twist here is that this whole question that we start with, that if you're selling something in order to, say, avoid an iser, so does that make it invalid? So, and does this Gemara, this Mishnah of Beis Choron, does that show you that it's invalid? So there's a number of Achronim who say it's actually the opposite. That the fact that, let's say on Pesach, your motivation is avoiding the Isser of Balyra Bayimatze, that's what makes it good. Because since there is a din that you need to actually sell it in order to avoid Balyra Bayimatze, so then you're going to have to actually sell it. So that sale has to be real. In other situations where you don't have this Isser staring at you, so then, okay, maybe if there are other factors that undermine it, so we'll have to think that the sale isn't real. But when there's an actual halachic imperative that if the sale's not good, then you're in big trouble. You're in violation of Bayira Bayimatze. So that's dafka what makes the sale good. So that's an interesting approach that a number of Achronim thought was correct, and that that is going to help with Maseiros Chametz. And that's together with some of the major points. You know, some Sofer and others think that the real reason the Chiras Chametz works is because, as the sale that we mentioned before, that as long as the sale is carried out properly, so whatever you might be thinking or whatever insincerity you may have doesn't matter, because the transaction with somebody else, it has to go based on what's on paper and based on what's said out loud. So you can imagine, for example, if you sold something to somebody and then he drove it home and then you said, well, I was just joking, I paid for it, I brought it home. The fact that you think you're not sincere is not going to undermine my rights. So too, the fact that the seller may not be totally sincere shouldn't do anything to change the fact that the purchaser took it home and went through a transaction, and therefore the deal is good. So that's probably the most present explanation of the difference. But also there's other factors of not saying anything to undermine it. But also this element that because you need it to work in order for it to be of any value at all, if it's not a good sale, then you're nowhere. You're just as in violation of Bayra Bayimatse as if you kept it the way it is. So then by definition, the assumption is that the sale went through. And this is interesting also because it comes up in a context of an even more significant transaction or commitment than sales, comes up in the context of marriage also. So there is a Tosefta here in Ksuvus, a source of Aleph. It's also Yerushalmi that tells the story of Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon wanted to help people during a time of famine where there wasn't enough food, and there were many women who were going hungry, and he had truma that they couldn't eat because they weren't Kohanim. So he married all of them. He married hundreds of women so that they can be allowed to eat truma, because that is a because that will then allow them to eat, and they'll be considered married to a Kohen. He was a Kohen, yeah. So that would allow them to eat the truma, and that's what he did. And Yerushalmi has the same story, and Yerushalmi refers to that specifically as a harama, as this trick, essentially, in order to make it happen. But yet, it still works. So the Achronim point out, Shipesa Frank and others, that yes, he wouldn't have married them otherwise, that he's not actually living with these people, but if it's not valid, then there's no point. So because he's doing this in order to allow them to eat truma, so then it means he had to have an actual commitment to marry them, and therefore it was effective for that purpose. So it's interesting also, you know, the whole question of green card marriages in America, which is a big legal problem, and you have to look into whether it's a problem just when it's a fake marriage, or if, let's say, a couple decides that they really want to get married, and maybe they were motivated to begin with because somebody wanted to become a citizen. But how much is that a factor? So essentially, what we're seeing here as far as the halachic considerations, that if somebody is motivated by some other issue, but a maisa, in order to get the results they need, they have to be genuine. So then, the motivation maybe doesn't matter. The question is it genuine in the moment? Because that's what it needs to be, so then, halachically, we would assume that it is genuine. So it's interesting also, so that question of green card marriages, so here you have like a halachic green card marriage, or a halachic marriage for an ulterior purpose, but what does that say about actual green card marriages? So there was a literature about this, that what about, there were situations where the government needed somebody, or the government was imposing some kind of rule on somebody, which would be waived if they were married. So they went through a fictitious wedding or whatever. So what's the status of that? Is that a halachic marriage? Does that have, they went to a chuppah for the purpose of satisfying a governmental standard. So does that have the status, again, setting aside the morality of that for now, let's assume that it's an oppressive government that, there are other reasons to do it. But setting that aside, after the fact, is that going to require a get? Is that a halachic marriage? So the Maharsham and the Ragachavar have tshuvas where they say that it must be that it is a halachic marriage, because look at Rabbi Tarfon. So it worked for Rabbi Tarfon, and clearly that was a real marriage. And therefore, these marriages that are for an ulterior purpose are real also and would require a get. The Maharsham says it doesn't require avelus. Let's say if a husband dies, says, okay, so then she shouldn't have to say shiva for him because she's not really bereft, she's not really bereaved, they don't really have a relationship. So he thinks, as far as lufos avelus is concerned, that she would be exempt from sitting shiva, but she is otherwise halachically married, because that's the impression we get from the story of Rabbi Tarfon. So Rabbi Si Pesach Frank has a truth about this, Rabbi Adi Yosef has a truth about this also, and they say, no, it's not necessarily true, because in the case of Rabbi Tarfon, so it's only going to make sense if it's halachically real. So therefore, because he needs it to be halachically real, so we can rely that that was a genuine marriage for halachic purposes. But in the case where there's governmental pressure, that's not coming from any halachic goals, so it's not necessarily true that they would have had in mind for it to be a real wedding. It could be that it was just a fictitious marriage, and therefore he's not so sure that that would need a get. But when there is a halachic purpose, so then you have to assume that they are sincere, and then he goes on to say, and that's why, he says in other places also, so the Heter Mechira that happens in Israel, so people object to that, and they say that that's not really sincere, and there's a whole literature about that, but even saying that, you can assume that it is sincere, because if it's not sincere, it doesn't accomplish anything. So therefore, because it's done for this purpose, so then you can assume that it is indeed sincere, and it's different from these other situations, and that's a major factor. A lot more interesting points about this. I'll just mention one or two others. You know, it comes up as a very fascinating discussion about Hilchos Pesach. Maybe we'll come back to the Pesach time. But there, so the requirement originally was that you had to remove the chametz from your house. And we generally don't do that nowadays. And that goes back already. The Bach was talking about when you had chametz that was too large to move. So what is a way to address that? So he writes that you have to sell the room where the chametz is and also give them the key to the room so they have access to it. So there's a whole discussion about this. Maybe we'll say more about it at Pesach time. But those concerns were there partially because the key is necessary. He should have access. Again, it shouldn't be a harama. There's a lot of discussion about the importance of the key and where that makes it more or less of a harama if there's no access. But that was taken pretty seriously by a number of the Achronim, and others thought that it was less of a factor. And the question of selling the room, so there was a fascinating debate, because the Avnei Nezer and others said, no, you can't sell the room. You should rent out the room. That's what we have in our Shtaros, that we lease out the room where the Chametz is. And the Avnei Nezer said, because how can we believe that that's real? How can we believe it's one thing to sell the chametz, like the Bechor Shor said? It's okay, you can sell the chametz with genuine commitment, because what other choice do you have? Either burn it or sell it. It's okay, you're going to sell it. But do we believe you're selling your house? Really? Does that make sense that you're going to sell your house for this purpose? So it says that's a harama. That's not going to have any credibility. So to rent it, that you can do. I can believe that you are renting your house. But to say you're actually selling it, that's not going to be credible. So there was a whole back and forth about this, and there were a lot of positions. There were those who thought you'd have to sell it, like the Makor Chaim. There were those who thought you'd have to rent it because of these harama considerations and others. And some tied it in more to the question of the key. So if you don't give the key over, so what impact does that have? So some thought that it's totally disqualifying, that makes it a complete harama, he has no access, so that's no good. And the Noda Behuda said, no, it's not invalidating. He felt you do have to give the key. And the Shtar was printed in his son's Chuvas, he makes it clear that you do have to give the key, but if you don't give the key after the fact, is it invalidate the sale? He said, no, because the same logic we said before, that if you make a deal, so the transaction still is what it is. So the fact that you didn't give the key was wrong, but it doesn't make the deal not a deal, because the sale is still what it says on the paper. It's still a valid transaction. But there are some who made an interesting distinction, and they said that maybe the key has a different impact depending on whether you sell it or rent it. Because if you sell it, okay, so the sale is a sale. You should have given him the key, but if you fail to, it doesn't undermine the whole sale. But rental is all about access. What else is it? So they can't sell it. They can't do anything else with it except access. So if you rent something and you don't give them the access, so then that Taka does perhaps negate the whole thing and show that it's not serious. So that itself was a discussion. The other post would talk about an interesting question of whether somebody is an avelis and he's not supposed to be profiting from his business during that time. So can he sell his store? And some thought that you can't sell, but maybe you can rent, because to sell, it's not going to be credible that just so you don't lose a week's profit, you're actually going to sell the whole source of your parnasa just to avoid losing on a week. That's not credible. But to say you're renting it, so that is perhaps credible, and that's going to maybe be a little bit more workable. And so there's a lot to say about this, a lot more to say about this, but there's also a lot of efforts that are sometimes suggested in order to minimize the harama component. And there's interesting literature about the selling of the Bechor, so that you can selling the mother of the Bechor to avoid this issue of Bechor, which is a current issue with Zman Hazeh. People who have animals with Zman Hazeh are subject to this concern also, and it comes up. Comes up in Chutz La'aretz, comes up, you have to make an arrangement. So there are some who suggest that you should minimize the whole harama component. And since selling part of the animal works also, so there was a suggestion in some svarim, the Rugas Avosam and the Chutz Mesholos suggested that maybe you should sell a very small part of the animal. And then when animal is shechted, you should actually give that part to the purchaser, because then it's we wouldn't call that a harama, because it was really a full sale. You really handed it over. So there's a lot of literature about that. Others thought that there's more room for leniency when it comes to the Bechor, because really don't have a better choice, and that even the Bechor Shor would agree with that, because the Bechor Shor, who said that doesn't work for Din D'oraisa, so Bechor is a Din D'oraisa, and yet he's probably okay with it, although that was somewhat of a debate. His grandson, the Beis Ephraim, wrote a whole kutras defending him against his detractors, and one of the questions was, well, what would you say about selling the Bechor? That's a Din HaTorah. So he said, no, my grandfather had been okay with that because he thought that was a sincere sale. But when it came to the Pesach issue, he didn't think that was such a sincere sale. So there was a whole literature about that. The Chassam Sofer, who was one of the major debaters against the Bechor Shor on this. He's a big opponent of Mechiras Chametz, and he has a lot of arguments with the Bechor Shor about this. But he thought also that even according to the Bechor Shor, Bechor Shor acknowledges that a Harama works for a Din Min HaTorah. He just thought that Chazal said you shouldn't do it, that Min HaTorah would be effective. But the Rabbanan, they said not to do it. It's not proper to try to avoid the Din Min HaTorah with a haram, and maybe they didn't say it in the case of the Torah, because you don't really have any better suggestions. So there they left it on the Din Min HaTorah that a haram should work. So you thought even according to the Bechor Shor it should work. So there's a lot to say about this. And the truth is, just to finish off, when it comes to Chametz, say that, you know, presumably it's not absolute according to everyone. And that even those who are in the Bechor Shor camp, who weren't so excited about Mechiras Chametz, would maybe feel differently if the sale was serious and had a lot of details that make it clear that that's the case, and that's how some Achronim assumed that even the Bechor Shor himself gave an indication that that may be true. And even those in the Chassam Sofer camp, there are those who argue that that's the default, but if the sale really is treated with cynicism and lack of seriousness, so then it wouldn't be good even according to him. So presumably, even the strong positions taken in this machlokas are not absolute and are subject to the attitudes and the details that are relevant. And it's important that we should try to believe in what we do. We should try to do things with commitment and seriousness. And cynicism is the enemy of all good things. So to keep the cynicism out of it and to appreciate some of these nuances and some of these aspects that comes to affect the details that the question is about. Okay, yeah, Shukar.